You're a new leader, so now what? By Dr. Darrell Cross. Narrated by the author. Chapter 1. Congratulations on your new role. You've arrived. This is what you've wanted. You've worked for this. Maybe you've planned for this. Maybe you received some specific mentoring to get you where you wanted to head. Maybe you did some further skill training through an external body such as a university, vocational college, or institute. Perhaps you did a series of in-house training courses or workshops to increase your skill and ability levels. Above all, you've worked hard. This didn't happen by accident. Of course, too, there's the possibility that it might have been simply through hard work that you were rewarded with a promotion to your new leadership role. You didn't necessarily engage in courses or mentoring or coaching. Instead, you showed that you were highly skilled, reliable, dependable, conscientious, and above all, you were a nice person. And the reward was a higher role and greater responsibility. Maybe you were internally promoted. Or maybe you applied for this role in another company or organization. Where's the training manual? There is, however, a strange irony in relation to your new appointment. You have spent years acquiring your trade or profession. For example, if you're a carpenter, electrician, plumber, or cabinet maker, typically you've undergone an apprenticeship over 4 years involving some classes at your technical or vocational college. And then there has been the on-the-job training under the eagle eye of leading hands or experienced or senior tradespeople. You've worked on numerous sites, on numerous jobs, in a range of conditions and environments. Yes, it's been a journey. However, you're good at your trade and have proved yourself. You're so good at your trade and your skill levels are so advanced that you've now been asked to be the leading hand, the foreman, or the supervisor. Maybe you decided to put your hand up for the leadership role for various reasons, including increased salary or status. Similarly, if you're an accountant, physiotherapist, engineer, or architect, for example, you've spent 4 or more years studying at a university involving theory and practicums, allowing you to gain the practical experience. Maybe you studied full-time and then went into the workforce. Maybe you studied part-time in, say, accounting, and then studied part-time to get your diploma or degree. After you graduated, you were fortunate enough to acquire a position, and you've worked hard in that role for 5 years or more. You're good at what you do. The management in the business or organization can rely on you to get things done, and you get on well with other staff. Perhaps you're seen as a team player or a self-starter. Clients or customers like you, and you have a sound reputation. In summary, you've trained hard, you've worked hard, been diligent, and you're known for a high level of skill and ability, and no doubt known as a good person. It's taken maybe 5 to 10 years to build this reputation. You know your stuff. Then maybe, for advancement and an increased salary, you get selected for a higher role, or perhaps you express an interest in such a role. So, now you've excelled in your trade or profession. You're now rewarded by being thrown or promoted into a role for which you've had little or no training. Pardon? How does that work? You've proven yourself as a standout, so they push you into a role? Or you choose a role for which you've had no preparation or training? Ironical? Yes. Further, an additional irony is that it might have taken you 10 years or more to get to this point of competence dealing with wood, electricity, pipes, finances, physical ailments, computers, construction, or designs, which was difficult enough, but now you're in charge of people. In other words, dealing with the physical or technical aspects of the job is taxing enough, even after about a decade of training and work. But dealing with people is another matter. Ever tried herding cats? Talk to any team leader, manager, or executive, and they will tell you that their issues are rarely about the bricks and mortar, but instead about the people problems, and these issues are many and varied and often difficult. And to make matters worse, they are all different. A far cry from the work that you previously did, where there were certain themes, patterns, and ways of working that you knew brought about solid results and outcomes. And who says that because you're good at what you do, that you're also going to be good at the people management area? Maybe you're simply a really great technician of sorts. The Harvard Business Review, July-August 2018, had an interesting research piece, see page 28, examining 53,035 sales representatives and managers across 214 companies in a variety of industries. In short, the best sales reps did not always make the best managers. The conclusion was that companies needed to closely evaluate whether moving their top sales performers into management roles was the correct kind of move. Instead, maybe companies ought to look to giving those top performers higher pay rather than a promotion. Why? Because some people are really good technically, while some others do, in fact, have strong leadership potential. They both don't go hand in hand. In essence, the research argues for two career tracks within organizations. One for those with outstanding technical skills, and one for those with sound leadership potential. And continued training needs to be given to both to help them develop further. To top off these ironies, there is no training manual which tells you how to deal with people in a leadership role. There is no guide called troubleshooting to explain how to manage yourself as a leader, as well as manage people and the different scenarios that confront any leader. And we're supposed to be a clever country? I think not. It's the same in any part of the planet. I've seen it and witnessed it. No matter whether it's England, the USA, Canada, Ireland, or various parts of Australia, it's the same. Get good at your trade, profession, or vocation, and you get rewarded with having to manage people without the necessary training. Most leaders simply fly by the seat of their pants. It's a case of trial and error. And the errors can be embarrassing, awkward, and highly distressing. Sometimes this trial and error can have serious repercussions, both career-wise as well as personally. The toll on the individual can be huge. Is it any wonder that new leaders often buckle under the weight of the new role and responsibility? Is it any wonder that new leaders make serious mistakes for which sometimes there is no recourse or no coming back? And this trial and error method takes years and years to work out, up to a decade or more. Chapter 1 Summary. Congratulations on your new role. There is a strange irony in relation to your new appointment. You have spent years acquiring your trade or profession, and you're good at it. You're highly skilled and experienced. You know your stuff. However, now you're rewarded by being thrown or promoted into a role for which you've had little or no training. Maybe you put your hand up for the new role, or maybe you were asked to step up. Regardless, you now confront a new arena in which you have had little or no experience or training.